I was looking at animated depictions of circumcisions because it's really hard to get an actual one on YouTube for some reason.
Yeah, just and because it's hard to get a GoPro on a rabbi's hat.
Like and subscribe, guys. Like and subscribe. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Worst Foot Forward, the podcast where each week we uncover the best of the worst. I am one half of your co-hosts, Ben Vandervelde. Tradition, sang Topol in Fiddle of the Roof. Tradition, tradition. But how does something become a tradition? Is it a piece of human interaction handed down from father to son and mother to daughter over years and years, becoming attritional, or like a tiny snowflake that begins an avalanche? Or does it just happen at 3 o'clock in the morning when your dad bets your Uncle Tony that he can definitely fit a sink plunger up his jacksie? It's really hard to know, and this week we may well find out. And with me is the golden calf to my carefully carved tablets of stone, Barry McStay.
Bow down and worship me.
Yeah, that is one of the first traditions of Worst Foot Forward.
Which end of the plunger?
Depends how drunk they got.
Are they trying to extract or are they trying to insert?
I mean, there's only...
And do you have an Uncle Tony?
Fuck, I do have an Uncle Tony, actually. It's my uncle Anthony, who is my dad's brother. Both of them are men of the 30s and 40s. Really? Or what?
I love that. Within a minute of us starting this recording, you are already breaking the rule that your mother set you on Facebook of not talking about your family this week.
Oh, shit. It's all right, it's my dad's side of the family. She doesn't like them. So my Uncle Anthony is probably a lovely man, but he basically resembles a 6'2" looming autistic vampire. To give you an example, right? When me and my missus got married, we had an engagement party that was forced upon us by parents, yes, which we didn't want to go to. And lots of random relations who we will never meet again came along and they brought us presents, and that's really sweet of them. And, you know, you got, like, food mixers and stuff like that. Anthony, my uncle, he used to tuck me in at night when I was 6 years old and tell me bedtime stories about Newcastle United in the 1950s. He bought us a Tesco Value alarm clock wrapped in pink tissue paper, and instead of a card, we had a single A4 piece of paper with the words "Regards, Anthony" on it. What such warm love and affection between me and my dad's brother.
Well, yes, this week we will be talking quite a lot about family, but we should introduce our guest first.
Yes,
off.
We should.
Our guest today, in an astonishing deviation from form for us here at Worst Foot Forward, is a stand-up comedian, writer and actor. Her style is bubbly, dark and brutal. Great for comedy, not so much for bottled water. A fluent Japanese speaker and a star in Japan, where she lived and worked for many years before her move to the UK, she has also performed all over the world, from the Edinburgh Festival to Dublin to LA, Paris and Melbourne. She was voted Brooklyn's best comedian in 2016, presumably in a vote where there was no electoral college system. She's also the host of the podcast Cliff Notes for Cunts, where she reads smart books so you don't have to. It's no wonder that Ben and I are both full of the joys of spring, because our guest today is the wonderful Spring Day. That's all you've been doing?
Yes, that's all I've been doing.
Traveling around the world. Fluent Japanese?
Yes, I am fluent in Japanese. And anyone who wants to study Japanese, I tell them not to, because no one's saying anything interesting. I mean, if you're into visual arts, into manga, into drawing shit, go for it, have at it, have fun. But otherwise, don't do it.
Yeah, is there a reason why Murakami writes in English rather than Japanese?
Absolutely. They say that the language is going to be dead in about 1,000 years.
Really?
Because the population is in so much trouble.
Oh, yeah, they've quite a low birth rate and,
Yeah, it just keeps getting lower.
Yeah.
And that's fine by me.
Because Japanese people...
Is that why you left? You were expecting to have a career that lasts at least another 1,000 years.
I wanted to have sex, and it just wasn't happening. That's part of their problem. But anyway.
Yeah, well, no, which is not something you should take personally in Japan. It's that I read an article that Japanese people, young Japanese people, are so freaked out by sex that they're just like, I don't want to do it. It's icky.
Yeah, because...
It's the cause of all the tentacle porn.
You know what's really weird is that the tentacle porn is the thing that most foreigners know.
Yeah.
They know... It's so weird. They know sushi, they know maybe kabuki, they know geisha, they know tentacle porn and bukkake. Like, that's all they know.
As a cultural calling card, that is a very mixed bag, isn't it?
Yeah. So, like, and it's very weird because in Japan, there's just so much weird shit that's just a really small corner.
Mm.
But somehow, the Westerners are just fascinated by the octopus porn. Just, and it's not really porn, you know, drawn porn, not actual octopuses used. They would rather eat them.
Exactly, because the problem is over here, all we've got is plain old haddock porn.
What's haddock porn?
It is not a thing. It's sort of like, you know, in Monty Python, the fish dance?
Yeah,
where he dances up to it and hits him with two like, little anchovies and is whammed around the side of the head with a massive fish. That's what I imagine. Just to someone battering away at someone's genitalia with a giant lump of freshwater fish.
Well, at least everyone looks like they're having fun.
Why did you come to Britain then? What was your next?
Well,
apart from the sex.
Apart from
which,
the sex.
Of course, the British are famously very good at.
Well, I'm having sex with someone who lives here.
Great, good.
So that helps.
That cheats, though, because he's an American.
It's true. It is true. So my boyfriend is based here, and I have been here many times. And for me, culturally, having lived in Japan for so many years and being from the States, like, the UK is the perfect middle ground. It is just the right amount of passive aggressiveness that I can handle and understand. Yeah, I know where I stand on with everyone here.
In a queue with everyone else.
Pretty much. Yeah. So I'm I like doing stand up here. I like the circuit.
Yeah.
I feel like in the States it's like it's stand up is more a stepping stone to doing something else.
Yeah.
Whereas here it's what you do.
It is the something else.
It is the something else. Yeah, exactly.
Would you what would you do if you weren't a stand up?
If I wasn't a stand up. Yeah. You know what, I think a lot of stand-ups, particularly women, you know, we get pushed into education because it's helping other people, it's entertaining, you always have an audience of 30 people or more every day that have to watch you and that kind of thing. So the funniest people I know...
That would be bad if you had to fly our kids in school together to come to your classes.
Yeah, they're called...
We're doing sex ed today, we cannot compete with this. Yeah, sex ed's booking at the Pleasance Dome.
Except in Japan, we're like, we're doing sex ed today, I'm not interested, no. I don't want to come.
give me double physics.
Cake? We'd rather have cake.
Yeah, well, the problem is that you advertise sex ed in Japan and they turn up to biology instead and it's just like octopuses in all the petri dishes.
Exactly.
We always ask our guests what they're worst at in the world. Oh, Spring, God. What do you think you're worst at?
I am the worst at baking, for sure.
Really?
Cooking I'm okay, because cooking is an art, baking is a science. Like, you have to have exact measurements of shit.
Yeah.
And that requires a level of patience and caring I just don't have. So I remember one time I was watching, you know, Little Women, the movie was on TV, and I watched that and I was like, ooh, I think I'll make some cookies. Like, I got inspired. And I had these weird measuring cups that looked like geese. Because, again, I don't give a shit. They looked nice in the kitchen. But the thing about that is that it's really hard to get stuff into the cups, right? Because they're shaped like geese. I've just put way too much butter in it and thought, it's butter. You know, the more the better.
Yeah.
It's great. So just threw it in there. And it was way too much butter. I took the cookies to work and I was like, hey, I made cookies. And everyone, I opened up the thing and everyone's like, those aren't cookies. I said, what do you mean? He said, cookies don't move. Like, it was just oozing back and forth. So I gave him some straws and told him to have at it. So. Yeah.
So this week we are going to be talking about the world's worst family tradition, which is a subject that Spring picked. Why did he pick this?
I think families are really interesting, particularly since my own is so fucked up. And when I get glimpses into other families that are halfway functioning, I'm like, oh, that's That's fascinating. How do you do that? I think the only tradition my family really has is not having our shit together. So, like, whenever we have, like Christmas or Thanksgiving or something like that, we have a big meal around noon, maybe, or mm-hmm. something, and then we, like, take a nap or whatever, and we talk about leaving the house, maybe seeing a movie, and then eating. But by the time we figure out what we're going to do, it's too late to go out anywhere.
Yeah.
And we just graze for days and days and days. So whenever I've brought over someone I was dating to meet my family, they would get really upset because they're like, there's no set eating time for breakfast. You just fend for yourself and just, you know, you just raid the kitchen whenever you want. And he's like, what is this? You live like animals.
That's right. It depends on which kind of animals you live at. It sounds like you guys live like herd animals, yeah. Which is all right. I mean, if you're living like lions, where your mum has to go out and hunt down something and bring it back to the family home, and your dad gets the first bite on it and butchers it, and then the guest is just like, all that's left is spleen.
Or one of those animals that does kill its young. Thank God you're here.
Yeah. Spring was actually transported here in her mother's mouth.
Well, that might explain why I'm disabled. But thank you for helping me solve that mystery.
Just so listeners aware, that is a statement of fact.
Yes, my mother did not take care of herself when she was pregnant. It's okay, she told me.
Oh, look, those Cuban cigars aren't going to smoke themselves.
No, it was a different time. It was a different time. I'm probably the only, one of the few people that watch Mad Men and go, oh. That's what they were thinking.
You watch Mad Men as an origin story.
Pretty much.
Some do X-Men, some do Mad Men.
Yeah. So, Barry, you're going to start us off. What are the world's worst family traditions that you uncovered?
So, babies.
They are a pretty poor tradition.
No, I read a lot of traditions where babies get quite a hard time of it. For example, in Mexico, at christenings and baptisms, they have this thing called bolo. Do you know what bolo is?
No.
So when a child is being traditioned and it's being christened and it's in the font in the arms of the priests, they have a tradition where coins are thrown at the children in the congregation, including that baby, as a sort of like gifts, because it's a celebration of childhood, right, by the members of the congregation. So I think exposing a newborn to the hard nickel copper blends of coins is probably a dangerous introduction to the world at large. The Romans had this thing called dies lustricus. So the first 8 or 9 days after childbirth, they decided to basically not name the child, because so many children died in the first week of birth, that they said, listen, we're going to give you a trial period. You're not officially a member of the family until you've passed the dies lustricus in 8 days' time. So it's like that whole thing of, you know, if you meet farm animals, don't give them a name, you'll get too attached to them. If you hire an intern, don't pay them, because if you do, you'll probably have to give them severance pay at the end of it all. It's all this stuff going, basically, they're not in until you've proven you can last a week on the planet. In Maharashtra, the Maharashtra state in India, they have a tradition as well involving tossing newborn babies off a tower.
I read that as well.
Have you read this one?
What?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. And like, hang on, like into a crowd?
Yep.
Or?
Yes.
Yep. Right, that's okay then.
Yeah, I know. When I read it first, I just said they'd throw babies off a 15-meter tower. And I had to go a bit further onto a different article to see pictures of it. And yes, there's a lot. It's basically like, you know, a stage dive for a newborn child. This same article said that there hasn't been an injury in 500 years.
Right, but they catch them in a bed sheet.
Yeah, it's meant to give them good luck in their later years. It doesn't say anything about, you know, their immediate future.
Well, if you survive this.
Yeah, you can survive anything, presumably. And the other thing I read about was El Colacho in Spain, which is baby jumping in the town of Castrillo de Murcia in northern Spain. It dates to the 1600s. And basically, a Corpus Christi is a feast day in May or June in the Catholic Church. And they have this tradition where men dress up in yellow as the devil, because, you know, we all know the devil dresses in yellow, guys. And they race through the streets, jumping over little hurdles comprised of babies lying on mattresses.
What?
Yes! They do little baby hurdling races in the streets.
Now, I am all for wife carrying and dwarf tossing.
More on wife carrying in a bit.
Brilliant. And cheese rolling. I'm not sure I feel about baby hurdling.
Yeah. What's even better is they're wearing these like Evel Knievel style outfits in yellow with little capes, carrying whips and castanets. Which are apparently to cleanse the baby of original sin. And weirdly, that's the bit the church has a problem with. Because Pope Benedict said, no, the church... The only way to cleanse yourself of original sin is through baptism, not through devil jumping. We wouldn't mind if you were jumping over babies if you weren't claiming that you were cleansing the babies while doing it.
What I want to know is, are there bookmakers at the side who are offering odds on the infant steeplechase?
Or on, you know, the lifespan of the babies.
Oh, God. Or are the bulls following behind them?
Yeah. And then Italians pelting the bulls with tomatoes. Oh, wouldn't you love to see that? Just have all of these ridiculous festivals as one giant procession.
First a cheese, then men dressed as devils hurdling babies. Then men carrying their wives also hurdling them. Then the bulls and everyone in the sidelines just throwing tomatoes.
And then at the end, someone dressed as Mickey Mouse going, I'm at the wrong parade.
Yes, wife carrying. Oh my God, I love this. Yukon Canto, as it's known as. If you haven't seen any footage of wife carrying, guys, it is a treat. Why is
Yukon Canto, is that...
It's the Finnish name for it, Yukon Canto.
Because it's a Finnish sport?
It's invented in Finland. Yeah, the World Championships of wife carrying have been held in Finland since 1992, where the prize is the wife's weight in beer.
I feel like we've spoken about this before, because that's a real difficult equation to work out, because you want a wife that is heavy enough that you get a good prize, but light enough that you stand a good chance.
Well, funny enough, there's a rule for how heavy they need to be. Yeah.
Were you going to say this?
Yeah, I was going to say that she has to be 49
kilos or above, and 17 years right. or older, and it can be a stand-in wife as well now. It doesn't have to be your own actual wife.
You can abuse someone else's woman.
You can have a professional wife as well as an actual wife.
Can you... Also, I'm like, Finland is pretty liberal, so are you allowed to have same-sex partners?
At the moment, it is a woman and a man. I don't know if they have... You know, it's a bit like Strictly... When will they have the first same-sex couples?
Right.
apparently it originates in the 1800s. The story of a robber called Hervo Rosvo Rankainen, who apparently would steal women from local villages and carry them away. There are three recommended styles of carrying.
The Fosbury flop.
There's the piggyback, the traditional way we imagine, like a backpack. There's the fireman lift, cross shoulders. And then there's the Estonian style, which is wife hanging upside down with her legs round your shoulders, with her head basically where your crotch would be, with her arms wrapped around you. Yeah.
Oh my God. But the thing is, if you're running really quickly, then she's going to get massive cauliflower ears from your inner thighs rubbing up against
the
ears.
That is a danger. There are some of the rules of wife carrying. The course has to be 253.5 metres long, which is oddly specific. It comprises two dry obstacles, like hurdles made of, a bit like the ones in steeplechase, like a solid bar.
How many wet obstacles?
One wet obstacle.
Yes!
Of at least a metre deep. The wife or lady is 17 years old and 49 kilos, as we said. The only required equipment is a helmet. What the rules suggest say they must enjoy themselves. And the winner, the world champion, is crowned by the person who does the course in the fastest time. But there are also prizes for the most entertaining couple, the best costume, and the strongest. So presumably you're sacrificing the ease of carrying a light wife by carrying a very heavy wife. There is an amazing guy called Taisto Maitinen of Finland, who is he's 53 now, and he is the world champion, current world champion of 2017, along with his professional wife Christina Harpinen. But he was also world champion from 2009 to 2013, so he won five times in a row, and now another one at the age of 53.
So he's the Roger Federer of wife carrying.
He's Roger Federer, yeah. Not only is he the Roger Federer of wife carrying, he has won world champion gold medals in water running, iron bar walking, bog snorkeling, kick sled, and he's the Finnish champion snowshoe runner and winter swimmer.
Oh my God, he's the he's the CB Fry of esoteric
sports. Yeah, like one of those gentleman sportsmen who could just do everything.
What I would love to see though is how does this factor in? Clearly, how do these competitions factor in polygamists? Like, are there like members of African royalty who come along and they've got to carry 28 wives on their shoulders?
Wives carrying.
Like, you know, those motorcycle display teams that wander past the pyramids on top.
Yes.
Just a pyramid of wives.
The Egyptian style, as it's called. Yeah. The story about how he met his professional wife is great. In 2007, he'd been sort of bobbing around on the wife-carrying circuit without much success. And then his current wife at the time was at a party. She wasn't free for an event. So he went on a dating website and put in the search parameters of someone weighing between 46 and 49 kilograms. He messaged a few of the women who found him. Catherine and Christina was the first person to reply to him. And they've been a partnership for 10 years since, yeah. All of that aside, that's all too jolly for the world's worst family tradition. The Aztecs, when a couple got married, would confine them to a bedchamber for 4 days, but not for fucking. No, 4 days of solid praying, guys, before you were allowed to consummate the marriage.
Oh.
How did they pray?
Endlessly and fast, I would hope. they would have to sort of say these prayers, and they'd leave the room only to offer sacrifices on the family altar and then back into the room and just be saying words over and over again. And it was, after 4 days, they could finally consummate, which sounds bad. But my tradition I'm going to pick is the tradition of the Sateri Mawe tribe of the Amazon and how they induct you into adulthood. Have you seen this?
Yes.
Oh my God, this is horrific. Ben, in the Jewish tradition, how do you become a man?
You have a bar mitzvah where you read a portion of the law and then receive several thousand fountain pens from your family.
Yeah, exactly. You get confirmed into the church in the Catholic tradition. Often there's things to do with when your first shave in older traditions or when you move into long trousers. The Sateri Mawe tribe induct you into adulthood with bullet ants. Yeah. So if people who don't know what a bullet ant is, by the way, they are number one on the Schmidt Pain Index, how you measure pain. That is the highest ranking you can possibly get on the Schmidt. It is like being shot with a bullet. It is 30 times worse than a bee sting.
There is an amazing exhibition on at the Natural History Museum, still at the moment, all about venom and poison and pain. And there's a whole wall of this fucking lunatic who basically has been bitten and stung by everything you can be bitten and stung by, and has created, he's describes himself as a pain sommelier, and he basically describes everything from like a two from, oh, that's a bit of an itch, to, oh my God, Satan's demons are doing a sulfuric tap dance underneath my skin. And obviously the bullet ants are right at the top.
They're very,
very
tip
top. Something tells me he's never been bitten by a woman.
But when he hasn't been inducted into adulthood.
But also when he turns up to the East German porn dungeon, like, what do you want, whips, chains? Nope, I brought my own insects, let's go.
Yeah, what this tribe do is the men go out into the wild and they find an ant's nest, and they sort of lure them into buckets or pouches, or they sort of rile it up with a stick and get them to crawl in, seal this up, bring it back to the village. They make this sort of vat of alcohol and they pour the ants into it to sort of drug them so they can properly work with them and pick them up without them being bitten. And they make these woven grass mitts, and they basically stick an ant between every corner on these little mitts. When you're coming to be inducted into manhood, you come and stick your hand into these mitts and you dance around in a ring with your arms linked with other men or boys who are becoming men, and you have to keep dancing and resist the pain. And you have to do this ceremony 20 times. Lead at a length of about 11 hours. There's a National Geographic video of them doing it. And it is horrific. They're bitten. They're full of the venom. They're nearly passing out. And the guy at the end of it is saying in the interview, he's like, yeah, I'll be back for the rest of my 19. I've still got to do. I want to become a man.
I mean,
his hands are black.
They're black. They might put some sort of thing on it to try and deaden them a bit, but they're becoming numb at the end of it. They're completely useless lumps.
Are the hands become inflated as well?
Yeah, they're just horrific. They're completely useless. They're just like stumps on the end of your hand by the end
Christ.
Of it.
Yeah. But they recover and they can use their hands.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at the end, they become men, Ben. So, I mean, that's the ultimate payoff.
There must be ceremonies for women going and becoming, from girls becoming women.
It's called getting fucked.
Yeah. Good. On brand there, Spring.
There There's so many. I have a bunch from different cultures. I'd say from the Western culture, probably the most recent terrible family tradition is the elf on the shelf.
Oh, yeah.
Which
have started, you seen these?
No.
Yeah, yeah.
There are these little elves. It started about 10 years ago. This woman named Carol Abersold and her daughter, they wrote this book about an elf sent by Santa to watch children to make sure if they're naughty or nice.
Yeah.
And at every when the child goes to sleep, he goes to the North Pole and gives him a report for the day.
Hmm.
Right? So, and you can never they're these little red dolls.
Yeah.
They've got they look like they're kind of androgynous. They're always looking to the side. If you've watched any 80s horror movies, it's just like one of those dolls in the background of Chucky. It's
okay.
Like that kind of thing. And so...
It just sits and watches you.
And so it you tell the child that it moves and goes around as soon as you go to sleep. But if you wake up, it won't move. And so what parents will do is that while the child is sleeping, is they'll put it in all these different situations that makes it look like it's living a life when you're asleep.
Why would you do that?
The internet has fucked us up. Anyway, it vanishes on Christmas Eve because its job is done, and then you get Christmas presents or you don't. You know, that kind of thing. And it's just terrifying. Living in, was it Big Brother or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I want to know, does Santa have a FISA warrant to have an elf on your shelf?
As far as Western ones, I thought that was pretty bad, and it's pretty young.
Yeah, like because a lot of people, I know a lot of parents who are, my husband's sister, for example, they're not doing the whole naughty and nice thing anymore because it's this weird thing where you go, this weird transactional thing where if you're naughty, it's a bad thing, you're not getting presents, but if you're not, like, it sort of turns it into a whole trade-off thing.
Yeah, well, it's
basically... whether you deserve or don't deserve things.
It's a childification of Christianity, because that's all Christianity is. It's just like, if you're good, you get to go to the good place. If you're bad, you go to the bad place. What about being good for the sake of being good?
Yes.
I don't need any sort of afterlife carrot and stick arrangement.
Rudolph loves a carrot.
Yeah.
But I think it's just one of those things where when you can't afford a camera.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm sorry, you were just too naughty this year.
This other one, which I thought was interesting, a Jewish tradition of slapping a girl when she has her first period.
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard of this?
I genuinely haven't.
So basically, when a girl has her first period, usually around the age of 12 or whatever, she'll tell her, Mom, this is happening, right? And then she'll slap her. And there is some debate as to whether it's a Jewish tradition or a Slavic tradition. So a lot of people are against it, saying it's shameful and warning the girl not to get pregnant and bring shame onto the family.
Yeah.
But people who've experienced this have said that their mothers told them when that happened to them that no, they're just trying to keep all the blood from escaping your body and going into your face instead and causing color, which makes complete sense.
Yeah, absolutely, because I imagine then the blood is immediately all sucked back up. That's how it works, right?
I mean, you do when you are first brought into the world, you get a slap to make sure you're breathing. And then when you first really misbehave and try and cross the road for the first time in front of horses or cars, and you only have a slap to make sure you don't do that. When you have your first period, bang.
It's well known that girls stop breathing when they have their first period.
I'm just saying, I like the idea of maybe having a slap at every major waypoint in life.
Lose your virginity. In comes your parents to give you
Yeah, when you get married, obviously, the father of the bride.
Everyone lines up.
It's like the scene in Airplane.
Yes, it's exactly.
Well, the thing is, so you have a little girl going, I'm bleeding out of my butt. Then you get slapped. So I thought that was pretty bad. In Japan, because I feel like I had to mention them at some point, they have a baby crying festival. So when the baby is a year old, they take them to the shrine, the Shinto shrine, where they're held by sumo wrestlers.
This is already superb.
In what position?
And they just hold
them. Just hold them normally.
Hold them, okay. And if they don't cry, they shake them a bit. And if that doesn't work, the Shinto priests come out with demon masks, right? And then the Shinto shrine priest comes around going, naka 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 naka, which means cry, 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 cry. And this is the idea is that it scares away demons and will give them health and happiness.
Are they sure it doesn't scare away babies?
Yeah.
Well, sounds pretty terrifying.
It is, yeah. It looks terrifying, but it's also kind of funny.
It is. I mean, they really need to get in the night garden over to Japan ASAP.
Maka paka, maka paka, maka paka, yeah, maka paka. Yeah.
And also parents pay about $150.
Why?
Privilege.
Why?
Because it gives them health and happiness. It's a kind of an insurance policy on their future.
Right.
Are we talking high-end sumo wrestlers here? So it's like an honor. You would get the David Beckham of the sumo wrestling world to cradle your child.
Well, not cradle, just shake him a bit.
Just shake him.
There is one Japanese family tradition I know, is that they adopt adult children a lot, particularly sons, don't they?
I've met several people like that. So
it's to do with inheritance rights and so on, isn't it?
So inheritance rights, so the name doesn't die out, particularly if they've only had daughters in the family, because those aren't really people.
Yeah.
And they want a business to continue and stuff like that. So I have a friend, it's kind of off the point, but interesting, so I'll tell the story. He got sued by his father-in-law because on their wedding day, he signed a contract agreeing that he would move in with his in-laws when they had a baby. And I said, why? He said, I thought it was a joke. And I said, you don't sign jokes. You just laugh at them and say, fuck you, sign your own contract, right? So he thought nothing of it. And then they had a baby. And he's like, so when are you moving in? And we're like, no, we're not moving in. And so he thought he compromised and bought a house down the street. That didn't happen. And that wasn't good enough for them. So he sued them.
Jesus.
And then eventually got divorced.
Wow.
And when he told the divorce lawyer what happened, the divorce lawyer laughed so hard he had to leave the room. But I would say the number one worst family tradition would have to be another Jewish one. Oral suction circumcision.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That is exactly how it sounds. It started 200 CE. The law is we circumcise, uncover, suck, and place a compress with cumin on it.
You suck off the foreskin.
You suck off the foreskin and place a compress with cumin.
Which
on
is
it.
Quite tangy.
It is.
Pink.
And by the way, this, thankfully, to my knowledge, did not happen to me. To my knowledge. From what I understand, the way the oral sucking thing is that they have like a little sort of glass pipe that they cut around the edge of the foreskin and they stick the pipe over the foreskin and...
There was no mention of a pipe.
Fair enough.
Like a bong.
Yeah, like pretty much.
A dong bong.
See, that sounds okay. So here's the interesting thing is that the use of cumin is kind of stopped, but some people are adamant about the oral sucking. Of this, that it has to happen. It was a health measure. The reason for the sucking was for bleeding, like bleeding out the bad blood. And so it was supposed to restore equilibrium between blood and the other three humors, phlegm, yellow bile, and black bile.
So by cutting it, by sucking it, you got a bit more of the blood out and it balanced everything out.
Right, and it wouldn't clot and all that kind of stuff.
Perfect sense.
Right.
We should all get it on prescription.
Right. But this is kind of a recently become an issue in New York, where there are more Jews there outside of Israel. It's the largest number of like Orthodox Jews there. And since 2000, there have been 17 babies who contracted herpes from this. Two died and two got brain damage.
God.
And I thought, you know what, for a comedy podcast, why not?
Yeah,
why not talk about it? And my boyfriend, who's also Jewish, was like, oh yeah, talk about that. And
human beings are so stupid sometimes.
It's like, it's so bizarre because, literally just when I saw my parents a couple of weeks ago, but had that conversation of, so, to paraphrase, are you going to cut a bit of your son's dick off if you have a son?
Yeah.
To which, luckily, I've got the get-out clause of, no, I married a godless harridan. But also, even if I didn't, no thanks. Like yeah. my mate Jamie, his nephew is not halakhically Jewish because the mum's... Sorry, no, he is halakhically Jewish because the mum's Jewish, but the father isn't. And because the mum and dad had split up, Jamie had the honour, in massive inverted commas, of holding down his nephew whilst another man got a scalpel out and yanked off the foreskin. And Jamie's not an easy man to freak out. And he was like, this is horrible.
No, it's absolutely horrendous. And it
does make your knob look prettier, though.
I bet. Yeah. You know what? I was looking at animated depictions of circumcisions because it's really hard to get an actual one on YouTube for some reason.
Yeah, just and because it's hard to get a GoPro on a rabbi's hat.
Like and subscribe, guys. Like and subscribe.
I didn't realize that an uncircumcised penis kind of looks like an upside down milk bottle.
I'm just trying to think back over the many thousands I've seen in my time.
Well, you know,
what, from your life as a milkman?
Well, you know, like really old-fashioned glass ones, kind of yeah, like that.
Yeah, you know, red top and gold top.
Thing is, if you've got a red top, you get slapped by your mum.
You need to get that looked at.
No health organization will say that they recommend it, and they won't say that they don't recommend it. They're kind of like, we're staying mum on this.
Is
they're
it
like,
because of cultural sensitivity, then?
Cultural sensitivity. Yeah. They said the only reason we would recommend it is if you live in sub-Saharan Africa, because there the benefits outweigh the dangers, because it decreases... there's evidence that it decreases HIV infection by like 30-something percent, also HPV, which causes penile and cervical cancer as well. Yes.
So. But that's, I mean, particularly the HIV thing, that's a very modern phenomenon there. Because obviously, I, as a sort of a teenager, when I discovered that we weren't the only tribe or ethnic group that practice circumcision, obviously famously in I think African tribes, maybe some South American ones as well. Mm. When you reach adulthood, then you go out into the wilderness and you are cut.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's weird enough doing it to little innocent babies who you should feed milk and love to.
Yeah.
Sure.
But as an adult man to go, so it's time for you to become a man. Fire ants? No. We're going to get this obsidian knife and whip a bit of your mother off.
Well, I know a couple of people who've had it done later in life, largely because of...
Medical reasons.
Yeah, medical reasons. Mm. The first time, when I lost my virginity to a man, I pulled his trousers down and he was circumcised. And coming from Ireland, where it is not very common, I had a moment of going, whoa, what the hell is wrong? Oh, wait. Oh, yeah, they could look like that too. I just kind of had never considered the thought that that might be the case.
I just imagine the schematics in your brain is like, scroll. Right, okay, now I know what to do.
Yeah, just the guy was looking at me, he's going, you buffering.
I will be in a minute, mate. Yeah.
I had a South Korean roommate, and I asked her if they circumcised, and she's, what's that? And I explain it. She's like, oh, we're civilized. And I was like, so which is it? Like,
by the way, I'm also skipping back. Did I say the first time I lost my virginity? I have not lost it multiple times, just to be clear.
No, but that's what you said towards the menu you picked up.
I've got boomerang virginity. It keeps coming back.
That's good. No, you know.
Ironically, it was to an Australian.
I think a lot of people lose their virginity more than once.
Yeah, I do,
because they don't know what they're doing. And then they're like, oh, that was supposed to happen.
There's the first time that you don't tell people about it, and there's the first time you do tell people about it.
It's like, how long have you been doing stand-up for? There are first gigs, and there are first gigs. Exactly. Sadly, according to that, I lost my virginity at the age of 31. Well, I really nailed it.
No, I thought I lost my virginity at 22. As soon as he got close, I went, I don't want to do this. And then, but I thought he'd made it in. And then I freaked out and thought I was pregnant. And just because I didn't have any knowledge. And then actually lost it at 26. So I would say oral suction circumcision is probably the worst one.
It's pretty goddamn awful. Mm. If you want to listen in July, then we'll be live streaming my son's oral suction circumcision. Or like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe, guys. Like and subscribe.
YouTube. The first thing I did, and I've been wanting to do this for ages, I put a message on Facebook and said, right then, pals, what are your world's worst family traditions? Let me tell you one or two that my friends came up with. My friend Jenny told me about a Satmar wedding tradition. I'm not quite sure who the Satmar are, but basically you marry the husband, spend the night together, and the next morning your mother-in-law shaves your head bald and you're never allowed to grow hair again.
Oh, they're Hasidics.
Yes. Right. I didn't realise they were... Well, that's the classic
Hasidic group, yeah. This is the thing I didn't know about until about 6 or 7 months ago when you told me.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a weird...
Hasidic women don't have hair under the wigs.
No, they just... Yeah, they've got the shaitels, the wigs. And I mean, all religions have got very strange relationships with women's hair, on their head in particular.
Yeah.
But also be like the... Yeah, suck off the baby dick and shave the wife's hair.
So what are their heads shaped like? Is it like a nice...
Yeah, we're cone heads.
They're cone heads?
Yeah. Yeah, that's why it's covered in scales. And there's a blowhole as well.
Oh, that was another... There's a Mexican... this one person that her grandmother would do tequila shots off the soft spot of the baby's head.
Oh, wow.
To ward off demons. And I'm just like, oh, that's horrible. And she's like, ah, it happens in Mexico. Well, the thing is, I couldn't find anything... on it
in
Mexico, because there's so many different things,
yeah,
and they also often contradict each other.
Did they? Was it? I don't know. Was it? They would. She would rest the shot glass in the baby's head.
No,
or
she would
pour tequila into the soft spot.
Yeah, to suck out the demons.
That seems tricky. Because also, do you have to have another baby with covered in salt and another baby where you've got a lime on the little bit of the head? Yeah, right, what order is it? Okay, so it's the salt baby, tequila baby, lime baby. Only works if you've got triplets.
Got the lime and the coconut.
Yeah. My friend Mickey told me about... There was a lot of Christmas Eve ones. So every Christmas, her mum would pick a film to watch as the family, and every year it would be so inappropriate. When Mickey was six, they picked The Matrix, and she had to be taken from the room screaming in fear when the robots came along. When she was nine, they put on East is East, and her 70-year-old uncle had to ask her brother, "What's that chap doing with a broom up his bottom?" At 11, Pay It Forward seems like a nice, heartwarming film about a brutal murder of an innocent child that ends in a candlelit vigil of people. And she's like, we're sort of looking forward to, like, you know, I'm in my 20s now. Is my mum going to pop on Cannibal Holocaust before we have the turkey? Sindhu, a previous guest on here, said that from time to time, the whole family will gather round together under one large tablecloth to do a Vic steam from a giant boiling pot of water. And they will be encouraged to spit their phlegm into the pot.
Ew. The family that spits together gets sick together.
Yeah. that feels like a family that still believes in the four humours, just getting the phlegm out. My mate from home, Katie Cooper, they have a number of large inflatable X-File style aliens that they will put in each other's beds if they're staying at each other's houses.
Just as, like, pranks.
Yeah. Rob Skeen, who I think listens to the podcast, said that when his family cannot agree what to watch on the television, which channel to watch, they will play a game called Stacks.
Oh, yes.
Do you understand?
No.
Yeah, so what they'll do is you have to stack cushions on your head, one on top of the other, and whoever has the highest stack wins, which I think we should use in the United Nations.
Yeah.
Although, in that case, I think all the Sikh people would do really well, because they've got a natural cushion on the bottom.
Got my husband's, or any of my husband's ones there?
No.
He told me a few of them. The one that I remember of his most of all is their dinner time tradition of chews. Not C-H-E-W-S, but C-H-O-O-S-E. And they would just make a plate of everything. And you could just pick and, like, a mini buffet of stuff. But it's great, lovely, sort of cute for kids. Now, in his early 30s as he is, I still have to, when he gets pizza, cut it into, like, 10 slices because he likes little food. Because Chews has inducted him into that way of thinking.
Oh my gosh, he's Cher from The Little Mermaid. Just permanently eating hors d'oeuvres.
Yeah, but just tiny little things.
Oh.
You have, in many ways, married a six-year-old. Psychologically, not literally.
It's traditional in my culture. As is the oral suction bit.
Two other little ones from my friends. My friend Carly, brilliant comedian Carly Smallman, says that her and her parents, who are both actors, at Christmas used to reenact the narration of Peter and the Wolf by David Bowie. And Carly said she was always cast as the duck and would die right at the start because, in the words of her mother, your physical theatre skills are the weakest. The creepiest one, my pal Corrine said that one of her friends, her parents passes down the bed that each child was conceived on.
Ugh.
And the child then sleeps in that bed when they're a baby. Which, obviously, I mean, I've got no idea how my parents managed to get the back of a car into my kidney. That's not true.
Like a salmon swimming upriver to spawn.
Yeah, oh.
Is it the same mattress?
Oh, I don't know. I really didn't want to go into it and discover. Oh,
dear.
But my favourite one...
That's awkward, though, if they shag in a hotel room. They have to try. You know when you go to a hotel, you sometimes steal the mini toiletries or the pair of slippers. Trying to get the bed into a trunky suitcase. A lot of them are attached to the wall as well. You have to really go to work on it.
I didn't realise this was going to be so horrific, but it is.
What? Says the woman who brought oral suction circumcision to the table.
No.
Ring your fucking neck in spring.
Baby herpes.
I meant the whole thing.
Oh, the whole thing?
No.
Yeah, the clue is in the name of the podcast. I mean, listen, sometimes we're celebrating heroic failure, other times we're talking about Hasidic oral herpes.
The gift that just keeps giving.
Yeah. The one from around the world I found was weird. In Bali, a pre-wedding ceremony is to have a couple of fillings. And apparently the fillings keep the evil spirits at bay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You file down your pointy teeth.
Which makes perfect sense. There is a tradition, a gentleman called James Bailey, and he is a Walsall United fan. Are they Walsall United or just Walsall? I think they're just Walsall.
Might just be Walsall.
But since the early 2000s, he has taken his dad's dentures to every single Walsall match. Because he used to go with his dad all the time, and his dad passed away. He took the dentures there, and they won, so apparently they're lucky dentures. And the picture in the newspaper I found is of him kissing his dad's dentures for good luck.
Does he have to sit with them on his hand?
Yeah.
Doing, like, the cheering for them as well.
Well, with little googly eyes as well.
Referees, I'm angry.
Just like the Indonesian, when people die in Indonesia, they stay in their house.
Yes, they keep them alive.
They keep the body preserved.
Treat,
yeah, they treat them as if they're sick and not dead until they can afford a funeral.
Yeah, because it's quite expensive.
Later.
Yeah, they sometimes walk, like, it's weird because they walk the body around in clothes and stuff. Like, they...
Because
it's quite expensive.
But the kids aren't freaked out by it. That's the weird thing.
Is it part? I was wondering about that. Is it partly to do with in Islam you're meant to have a quick funeral, so you pretend that they're not dead until you can actually afford the quick funeral? I wonder.
It might be. I mean, obviously, there's
he says conjecturing.
There's also in Inca tradition these things called panaquas, and panaquas were the mummified remains of your ancestors. Mm. So obviously, various cultures of ancestor worship. But this was all to do about property ownership. Mm-hmm. And so the whole point was that you wouldn't inherit the property. The property still belonged to your dead parents. Mm-hmm. And it basically, in theory, was meant to stop as soon as someone died, you and your brothers and sisters fighting and killing each other for the property. So the property would only pass down to you when you died. Which was a bizarre way of solving a problem. But that's what they tended to do in ancient... And that also times. Modern Southern America.
That is the perfect example of your parents going, we'll deal with it later.
Yeah. Two other wee little things. There is, I have to mention this, it was doing the rounds in the Metro newspaper a couple of weeks ago. A gentleman on Reddit revealed a rather awkward situation where he discovered that his family's tradition of a poo knife was not a thing that was carried into other families. Listeners should know that Spring and Barry just went into a I'm listening position. Basically, the story goes that the guy on Reddit, his family were renowned in the family of producing fairly gigantic turds.
Mm.
And because of that, they had a big rusty bread knife on the wall outside the toilet where if it blocked the toilet, they would then chop it into manageable chunks. Like they were serving it to share in...
Slicing off bits of chorizo.
Yeah. Oh, you have put me off my lunch, mate. Fast forward to he's in his early 20s. He is, brilliantly, at his weed dealer's house. He buys a bit of weed, has a smoke. He's like, oh, I need to go to the toilet. He goes and lays a hefty length of cable.
If you're shitting out a table.
Yeah.
Sure,
wow.
Like a table,
there's a lot of fibre in it. And he goes out in the hallway, just like, Dave, yes? Dave, where's your poo knife? What? Your poo knife? Your knife for cutting up poo? I don't know what you're talking about, mate. It's just a block your toilet, and I need... And like, what do you call it something else? Do you call it like your turd spatula, or your what is it? And he's like, there's no such thing as a poo knife. What a horrible thing to discover.
People do usually break it up with whatever is there, right?
I actually use an oral suction tube.
It's only because your Uncle Tony's still busy with that plunger.
It's the family plunger. You're not allowed to buy a new one. It's like,
Ben, you realise that the family plunger isn't a tradition that everyone has.
What,
right?
you don't have a family plunger?
No.
It's like, I've sat on it, my uncle sat on it before me, all the way back to Moses on Mount Sinai, shoving a plunger up his Semitic ass.
Oh,
like
dear.
And subscribe. But my pick is going to be a British woman called Brittany Marshall. I feel really sorry for Brittany. Brittany is the fifth of five sisters. Her mother and her four other sisters have all got breast implants, and they consider it a family tradition to get breast implants. They have spent £50,000 on breast implants.
Jesus.
And her mum, a 32 double G, when interviewed about it, saying, like, do you think your daughter doesn't want to get breast implants? And she just went, oh, I think she's just going through a funny phase.
Of, like, thinking, maybe, like, send me to some good schools and things.
Yeah, maybe, like, why have you blown 50 grand on making your norks look artificial and oversized? And, the photo's horrible, because this, you know, poor Brittany is at the front of the photo just going, I seem like quite a happy young lady. My sisters and mother are clearly borderline mentally ill about their body issues, and they are clearly putting peer pressure on her to change her look.
Do they have any reason for wanting to get them apart from, oh, we've all done it?
I'm not sure. I think it's we think it makes us look better. And
as someone who owns large boobs, it's overrated.
Yeah.
There's so much you can't do. You can't run.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always reminded of what Jeff Foxworthy said, is when you get a certain age and you get those done, it's like putting a chandelier in a haunted house. Like, it just doesn't, you know, like, for a short time it's fine, but after a certain amount of period, like, can someone adopt her out of the family?
I hope she
can move to Japan and they adopt adults, and they're running out of people.
Yeah.
Oh, it's great. We're solving problems here.
We'll adopt her out for us forward. Yeah, she can come live with us.
Yeah, but first she has to put on mittens covered with fire ants.
Yeah.
Then
and sit on the family
then.
Plunger.
Yeah. It also reminds me, one other thing, since we mentioned it, I found a family on the internet who, as well as giving birthday cakes, give first pube day cakes.
I saw them.
I saw that as well. I asked my Korean friends, and they're like, what? And so I think it's
that specific family.
Yeah.
But you know what? I think us three, we are going to continue that tradition.
But that to me, that sounds like a single mom decision.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I got a pube. That's great, honey. I'll bake you a cake. Like,
no, it sounds like a single dad tradition. Oh. I'm not sure how to react to this situation.
No, if it was a woman, it'd be like, wait till you get two more, then we'll braid it.
Our choices this week for the world's worst family tradition is Barry's suggestion are the Sotere Maue tribe from the Amazon basin, who welcome men into adulthood by putting on woven mittens full of bullet ants.
Yeah,
I've kept getting the name of the ant wrong, but bullet ants, and they have to do that 20 times over 11 hours. Spring suggestion of my own people's use of oral suction to remove a cut foreskin from a baby's kosher wiener. Or my suggestion of Brittany Marshall, whose mother and sisters have decided to become bimbo-tastic and are trying to force her to have breast implants. I feel very sad for Brittany, and I don't like the situation she's in, but ultimately she's just one girl in just one family. Having bigger breasts forced on you if you don't want them is not great, but it's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah.
It's not. It's not a mitten full of hungry ants.
No. It could be. It could be. If you get the, if you get ant, I wouldn't want ants on your fake boobs because that might deflate them.
No.
That would be
particularly
bad.
A bullet ant.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but that'd be incredible if it deflate a boob and the ant just flies off into the stratosphere.
Yeah.
I'm really torn between Springs and Barry's. Obviously, Spring, you are speaking to my emotional core of something which I think is... like shockingly awful and outdated and pointless and bizarre and just a disgusting welcome into the world. And there's no need for it. I can, at a push, I can mildly intellectualize the need for circumcision.
But it is a small number of people that do it. Even among the Orthodox, it's the Orthodox of the Orthodox.
Mm. Yeah. Look, it's not like the entire state of California is doing the ant mittens. It is
it's true.
A tiny tribe. And the thing that I'm told, and it's true, I don't remember my circumcision, as almost all Jewish boys don't. Whereas... having a mitten full of hungry ants, and it's not even that that's so bad. It's the fact that you've got to dance at the same time. Like,
I'll do this again 19 more times.
Yeah, like a few years ago, I did a half marathon, and sometimes when you do half marathons, you get a little bit of ball chafing. And one night, I chafed, and I had to go out dancing, and that was tough.
But that was the night you became a man.
That was the night I became president.
That was the night you learned how to dance with your shoulders.
Yeah. just for sheer batshit awfulness, I'm going to choose Barry's bullet ant mittens.
All right.
Before we go, it is time for the world's worst news, and we are going to Pyeongchang, where
the city that sounds like bed springs.
Yeah. The place where the Winter Olympics has just happened. Mm-hmm. And the Norwegian team have had a bit of a snafu because their on-site chef meant to order 1,500 eggs to feed the team. However, in a classic bit of spinal tappery, he actually ordered 15,000 eggs. And so they have 121 members of their team plus officials, which means that they're going to have to eat 124 eggs during the Winter Olympics.
North Korea?
No, I think what they're going to do is that they're going to eat the eggs in one sitting and then send them to North Korea as chemical weapons. but to be fair, like the chef who's in charge is sort of like taking it in his stride. He's like, hey, the aim's to have fun and be as good friends as we can be when we come back here. It's like, you're not going to be good friends after 124 eggs eat.
Oh, that's going to be a rough flight.
Oh, gosh, it really is. Which, I don't know, I just imagine doing the ski jumping powered by 124 eggs. Maybe it'll give them the little extra boost they need to get up to the world record.
Amazing.
Before we go, Spring, where can people find you and what can they find you doing there?
I have a website called springdaycomedy.com because, as we discussed before, if you just Google my name, you'll just get a bunch of gardening articles. I am more popular than Jesus. I'm doing the Edinburgh Fringe Festival this year, so that's good. Will be doing Spring Day Strong Codependent Woman. Who runs the world? Not this bitch. I gave the keys to that drunk guy over there. So I'll be doing that show. If you want to find me around town, I have my schedule up on my website. Yeah. And a lot of times I just have a city name. So if you want more specific information,
Spring Day on Twitter as well?
I am Spring Day Comedy on Twitter. Lovely. And Facebook.
Yeah, happy days. Well, we're all off to H&M to fill the bobble hats full of earwigs. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Bye.
Stuff me full of fire ants. Thank you very much for listening to this week's episode of Worst Foot Forward. It's just Barry this week, Ben. is busy being an expectant father this weekend. So it's up to me to thank Spring so much for doing the episode this week. If you liked what you heard, and why wouldn't you, do look her up, springdaycomedy.com. So a couple of things, the usual guff first of all. If you liked this show, if you've never listened to us before, well, thanks very much. I hope you're liking and subscribing, guys. Like and subscribe, like and subscribe. Go to iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you listen to us, give us a little rating. That would be lovely. 5 stars is the, by now, obligatory number of stars. Even write a little review telling people, oh, it's quite funny, I think you'd like it. That's always really appreciated. And the other thing you can do is find us on social media. We're on Twitter at WorstFoot. You can find myself at BazMaxDay. Ben is at Ben Vanderveld. And you can also find us on Facebook if you look up Worst Foot Forward. And send us an email to worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com if you've got suggestions or ideas for upcoming shows that you would like to hear. If you aren't already following us on Twitter, do get involved. Thanks so much to everyone who liked and retweeted one of our tweets this week. I'm quoting it directly. The Irish word trumpador means trumpeter. It can also be used as a term for a loud-mouthed, obnoxious person, accompanied by a picture, obviously, of the American president. And that was came courtesy of the Twitter account at the Irish Four, who have a podcast, Mother Folklore. Yes, that's what the word is, mother in English, and F-O-C-L-O-I-R, which is the Irish word for dictionary folklore. Do check out that podcast. They have nothing to do with us. We've never chatted to them or anything. That's one of the many facts you can find on our episode with Richard Soames about the world's worst words, if you want to go back and listen to that one. But that's the sort of crazy things that go down on our Twitter account. So, a couple of things. Well, last week we sent a shout out to our listeners in Eureka, America, as Ben called it. Ben has now determined that Eureka is in California. So, thank you to everyone who listens to us. Just having a little look at the stats here on our SoundCloud. We've got people listening in Rouse Hill, Australia. Is your hill roused? Hopefully it is. If it isn't, you should be listening to Worst Foot Forward, because the people in Rouse Hill, it wasn't roused before they listened to us. Caringba, Brisbane, Concord, Kellyville and Chadstone, all of these places in Australia, as well as Viby in Denmark and Povoa de Santo Adrião in Portugal. If you're our listeners in those particular places and you're listening to this bit of the show, firstly, congratulations for not stopping the episode just before the talky bit at the end where we shamelessly beg for your affection. But also, do get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from particularly strangers across the world. Coming up next week, we have an amazing guest. His name is Stephen Colgan. If you have not heard of Stephen, what an amazing career this man has had. A former police officer. He was a police officer in London for 30 years. He then left the force and moved into the much more stressful world of being a researcher and scriptwriter for the BBC TV show QI. If you, I mean, who doesn't love QI? If you're listening to the show, chances are you're a fan of QI as well, as Ben and I both are. He's worked on the BBC Radio 4 show, The Museum of Curiosity. He is an artist and illustrator. He creates a lot of the artwork in the various QI annuals, and he has a novel out at the moment, A Murder to Die For. He was showing us it when he came to record the episode, a comedy murder mystery all around a convention for a sort of an Agatha Christie type figure, and a murder takes place among this murder mystery writer convention. So it's a brilliant idea for a thing. He's appeared on lots of podcasts, including our dear friend Simon Watt's show Level Up Human. So, and he's also appeared on No Such Thing as a Fish and various other things. Anyway, you can tell I'm very excited he was on the show. He lowered himself from the heady heights of things like the Hay Festival and TED Talks and the Ig Nobel Prize and things like that to talk with great knowledge and research, as you would expect, on the world's worst police officer. So tune in next week to hear our very first QI elf. Thanks for listening. See you then.
Worst Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.